You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are talking
while married.
Well, hi, pretty lady. I just want to let you know I read your article on Welcome to Calisuela, and I loved every bit of it, and I hope it goes viral.
Oh, well, thank you. It was really kind of an interesting article to write because it just flowed. It just was one of those ones that just flowed right out because there's so many things that are happening in California. And I hate to keep talking about California because there's so many other things in the country to talk about, but they just keep doubling down on doing stupid things and things that are just not good for their population, and you can't ignore it.
Well, you know, I don't think that it's just because it's California. I think what is going on in the state of California is sort of a precursor to what could go on in other states in the United States, especially some of the more liberal states. California is, I think, maybe other than New York, seems to be by far the most liberal state that we have in the United States. It tends to be a trendsetter. And where California goes, so go other liberal jurisdictions. So, yes, we kind of enjoy picking on California, but I think there's a good point to it, and I think there is a broader application nationally.
Well, I agree with you because they do consider themselves a trendsetter, and people do tend to emulate them, and I don't think that that's necessarily a good thing. But the article is called The Future Calisuela, and the reason is because it's going to start eventually here looking like Venezuela with their socialistic policies. And it really lays out kind of a little futuristic plan where I'm driving through Calisuela and reminiscing about, you know, how we got to this position that we find ourselves in that day. And, you know, all of the policies from starting with the pensions that they gave to government employees and the school teachers unions and all the places that have really wasted a tremendous amount of money, and how the state got themselves really upside down on the pensions. And then you take it into things like the mismanagement of natural resources, the mismanagement of their dams and their watersheds.
The
and,
infrastructure,
sure.
The horrible roads. Mm-hmm. I mean, all of those things. The school systems are atrocious in most of the jurisdictions. And the roads are terrible. And because we do so much driving now between California and Texas and vice versa, we really do see the changes. And, you know, when we compare and contrast how horrible the road systems are, the graffiti, the trash, the weeds on the road, just the complete disrepair of the state of its road and highway infrastructure as compared to its next door neighbors. And as you go eastward, especially like on the 10 from California through Arizona, Nevada, New Mexico, going all the way out to Texas, and then, you know, going farther. And I think by far California roadways are the worst.
They are the worst. And, you know, there's just a lot of other things. There's a tremendous amount of waste in the money. But then, you know, I talk about something you and I talk about personally a lot, which is, you know, what they're doing to law enforcement in that state. They're absolutely just emasculating, if that's a good word.
Well, I think maybe decimating is probably...
Decimating is a good word.
Is a better word. You know, what they've done to state parole through Propositions 109 and 47, and what they're doing right now with the released felons and then giving felons voting rights, state parole is just really no more. It's an agency that is auguring in very rapidly, and the state parole officers, as you and I know first because of the case that involved you a few years ago, where they were powerless, you know, to do anything until they were, you know, threatened by me. And then all of a sudden the task force developed to catch that horrible person, you know, that smashed into you as a DUI and nearly killed you a few years ago. And then my case against the state of California, which was Russell, where I took on state parole and the attorney general's office and beat them silly, because the jury saw the facts that state parole has been decimated and they really don't care. I'm sure that there's some parole officers that do care, but what I found during my investigation is the vast majority did not care and were just basically powerless. And a woman was murdered as a result.
Well, and this is not, unfortunately, an isolated incident. This is happening on a regular basis, because when you get rid of all of the agencies that are there to protect the public and you start diminishing them, you start taking their powers away, then what do you have left but the criminals to run roughshod over the public? And that's what happens. And you know, the sad thing, and I say it all the time, is that they don't just stay in California. They branch out all over the United States, which is all of our concern in the United States. We are the United States, and we are free to move about the country. So therefore, it's not just the good guys who are free to move about the country. It's also the bad guys. And that is a big problem that I have with California, and that's in my article. The other thing is that along the way, as they continue to create all of these dilemmas and all of these financial crises by their bad management, they continue to raise taxes, continue to raise gas prices, continue to raise fees, continue to raise anything that they can possibly take from the working public, the taxpaying public, corporations, business people, and keep wanting to go back to the well for more. But the thing is, Ron, it's the money is there. The money is there, but they waste it on things like the $33 billion that they spend on illegals. So just today, as I'm reading, and this was, you know, after the article is written, after it's published, so it has nothing to do with the article, I read that there's a whole new bill coming out that says, oh, the school kids don't have enough money, so we only pay so much for the school kids, and it's way down as to what other states pay, so we need more money for our school kids. So,
now, look, Linda, let me take us back in history, back to when California voted to have the lottery.
Oh, yeah.
And was that not 85, the way they sold it to the public, at least what I recall, is that 85% of all of the proceeds from the lottery was to go directly to the kids. Not administration. It was supposed to go to the kids and for education and school books and infrastructure for the kids and creating basically a self-sustaining educational system. So what happened?
Well, they did a bait and switch. So what they did is they give the lottery money to the schools, as they said, but remember, they also said that they'd never ask for any more money because this was going to be self-sustaining, and it would be if they did it right. But what they did was the money that was already for schools, so then they reallocated that to something else. So instead of them having the money for the schools and then adding the money for the lottery, which was going to solve all the problems, they just reallocated that money, so the schools really didn't end up with more money.
That's terrible.
It's terrible. It's what they do on everything. So what the new bill says is, since the kids need money, the new plan is that they feel that corporation presidents and CEOs make too much money. So they are now going to tax, or this bill is up to tax the CEOs of corporations, big corporations, they said, but they didn't say how big, and have them have to pay an extra tax to go to the schools. And if the people in their employ at those companies are not, by their judgment, making enough, then they can have some other extra tax. This is just so crazily subjective and so wrong and unfair. You cannot pick out a few people to have to pay for their shortcomings.
Is this not another technique of redistribution of wealth?
Oh, absolutely. And it's also, you know, a thumb to President Trump, because they feel that the CEO's got a big tax cut. By the way, everybody got a tax cut. But, you know, this is just patently wrong. And again, what I would say is put the money back that you stole from the kids in the first place. Stop paying for all the illegals. Take that $33 billion, if you'd like, and put it towards school kids. Put it towards something that is for the citizens that are paying into it. But they just keep doubling down. So you can't, I mean, I couldn't write enough in an article to cover all of the idiot things that they do in California. But it just doesn't get better, Ron. It gets worse.
Well, you know, I just thought your article, and you write good articles, and this particular one just really resonated with me on so many levels. And I hope, you know, our coffee clutch people are going to go on to AmericaOutloud.com and not only, you know, read your article, but share it with a lot of other people. Because, Linda, I truly believe it was one of your very, very best, and a very accurate and revealing article as well.
Well, thank you. And I do want to say one more thing about it, Ron. That, you know, the conclusion that I come to is that where this is leading in that state is preventable. How is it preventable? It's preventable by people absolutely, truly understanding what is going on financially and legally in that state, and voting in a way that will put the right people in office to stop the progression of what is happening. Now, you can, if you are one of the people that are benefiting from the funds to illegals, or from you know, the welfare given out, or from any number of entitlements that they give, you're probably not going to vote that way. But even those people are foolish not to, because this is all going to come crashing down at some point.
You know, do the people, and, you know, of course, I don't have the liberal mindset, so I can't think in these terms. But would it not be in for the future for people that are, let's say, you know, middle class, blue collar workers, a lot who vote liberal? Can they not see what this is happening? What they are creating by reelecting this Democratic supermajority that make all of these ridiculous laws that are so hurtful for everybody in the state of California?
I think people don't realize, and when I read what this particular bill said that we just talked about, the way that it was addressed, if you read it and you had no knowledge of anything, you would think, oh my gosh, that's right, the kids need the money, the CEOs don't need the money. But you have to really know, you know, what is behind this, and that they don't tell the public the truth. So if you just listen to what they say without doing your own research, you're probably doomed to vote the wrong way.
And I think that's what happens too. I think the vast majority of the people, like I've said many times, and you have too, are just not educated, and they just go with the propaganda and never think twice about it. You know, they have these people that are their legislators, you know, the Pelosi's and the Gavin Newsom's, and, you know, all of these different types of people that we have in California. And they just spew out this meaningless rhetoric. And these people are just like lemmings, and they just, you know, follow them off the cliff. I just don't understand it, when I think if you just connected the dots, you could see that what they've created in the state of California is just a horrible environment, where I think you said in your article that in the future there will just be two classes of people in the state of California, the very rich and insulated, and the very poor.
Yes.
Because they pushed out the middle class. And
yes,
you and I see this all the time with blue-collar middle-class workers families with a couple of children that don't like the school systems and are getting taxed out, you know, out of their bracket, and then also the retirees that are leaving the state in just droves.
Well, they are. And last night, you and I met a new friend, and this is somebody that moved into our neighborhood. So last night, you and I met a new person in our neighborhood, and that person had just moved from California. And I was having a conversation with him as to the reasons that he moved. And
he's from Irvine, California.
Yes. And his family wanted to move, so he had the opportunity to do so. And he's got family members also moving from Chicago that are coming to live next door to them. So they're going to have family in the neighborhood like we do. But one of the things that he said was pretty shocking to me. Our kids are grown, so we're not in the school district anymore. But he said that they are teaching their young kids, and one of their kids is in seventh grade, sex education.
Oh, are you talking about the school is teaching the kids
yes,
sex education?
And okay. They've got a new sex education program. But they didn't really tell the parents that that's what it was. They just said that they have some new things that they're going to be teaching and that it's all cool and everything is good. And when his kids came home, he was in shock that they were teaching them that in seventh grade, that oral sex and anal sex are just normal parts of having sex and all is good. And no matter what your sex is, male and male, female and female, male and female, whatever you choose, it's all okay. And he was very, very angry about that. First, he felt that they weren't honest with him about when they represented at the PTA meetings. And secondly, he says, that's not their place. That's my place as a parent to teach my kid.
You know, I really agree with that. And because our kids are so old and we really didn't have to go through a lot of this stuff as they were growing up, I'm actually so surprised, and I'm actually appalled, because I don't think sex education is a function of the school district.
I don't either.
Right? I don't believe it is. I don't believe that teaching sexuality is a responsibility of the school district. I think that's a parenting issue, and I can't believe that the parents weren't appraised of that, and that this wasn't completely run by past the school board, and that the PTA had input. But you know, on the other side of it, I just see that there are so many parents that are working really hard, like you and I do, and we are completely engrossed in the work. And of course, our kids are grown up, and as they were growing up, we were very much involved in their education. But I think parents today are working so hard that they become somewhat disengaged with the school functioning, you know, going to PTAs, going to school boards, finding out what's being taught. And I know that one of our friends that works for a school district recently told us that they were getting new history books, and they had replaced Civil War history with history or writing about the LGBT community. And I'm going, what the heck does that have to do with the United States history? You're going to replace the Civil War with that?
Well, I can't even imagine. And this is what's happening. So in the schools, and this is, oh my gosh, this is just a subject you know I could talk about all night. The Desi dog is enjoying.
Drinking.
Oh, is she drinking? Okay,
yeah, drinking a lot of water right now.
but I think that the school districts are what they are teaching the kids. The parents really, really need to pay attention to. And listen, there's a tremendous amount of good and great teachers out there that are so important to kids, and kids need them. But whoever is making up this curriculum are absolutely just off the wall with what their curriculum is. here's what kids need. I'm a business owner, you're a business owner. We need kids able to do basic things, reading, writing, arithmetic. They don't need to be taught about oral and anal sex in seventh grade. That's just not the place of the school.
Well, you know, I've actually seen articles, and I've seen a couple of news stories where they're teaching sexuality, I mean, much younger than seventh grade.
Oh, they absolutely are. I'm just saying what this dad has said that he was very insulted about, and he wanted to live in a place where it was a little bit more conservative.
Yeah. Well, you ready for a cup of coffee?
I am.
Tired of watching the same old sporting events? Well, kick it up a notch and get ready, America, for something you've never seen before. It's the new generation of Western superstars. Shorty Gorham's American Freestyle Bullfighting. Who will win? The acrobatic, tough-as-nails Western superstar or the meanest half-ton fighting bulls on Earth? This is one of the most extreme sports you'll ever see in an arena. This is hand-to-horn combat on a level playing field. Go to ShortyGorhamAFB.com or find them on Facebook. It's bullfighting time.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
This is Dr. Ron Martinelli, forensic criminologist and host of A Thread of Evidence on America Out Loud. If you'd like to find out what forensic criminologists really do in the field, and you're tired of the false narratives about law enforcement and want to unpack the cases that I've worked throughout the nation, then please pick up a copy of my new book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, on sale right now at Amazon.com. That's The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police at Amazon.com.
Thanks a lot for the coffee. Hey, I want to talk about something that is really bothersome to me as a retired law enforcement officer, and that is what's going on across the country with these new social justice warrior district attorneys and them making arbitrary and capricious decisions to not prosecute certain types of crimes. Now, I think about a week or so ago, you and I talked about the Dallas County district attorney here in Texas that decided that he's not going to prosecute certain types of crimes. He's not going to prosecute trespassing. He's not going to prosecute petty thefts under $950 or $750. He's not going to prosecute lower-level crimes, drug influence, and lower-level drug possession crimes. Now, we've got, in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, we've got the Philadelphia district attorney, whose name is Larry Krasner, and he just recently announced that his office is no longer going to prosecute people that have been arrested for driving under the influence of marijuana. I mean, this is absolutely incredible. You're either under the influence or you're not. And if you look at the state of Colorado, that was one of the first states in the United States to legalize marijuana, their fatalities, their accidents, where people are under the influence of marijuana have just skyrocketed, and their injury, serious injury accidents have gone right through the roof. And it's happening all over the United States. And yet you get the Philadelphia District Attorney Larry Krasner, who now says he's not going to prosecute DUI cannabis offenses.
Well, you're right. There is a plethora of this happening around the country. And here's the thing to me, and I think should be to all Americans, but that's my opinion, that if there's a law, the law is the law. And you're either guilty of breaking it or you're not. But these people that are making their own basically political statements and deciding what they're going to do and what they're going to prosecute and what they're not going to prosecute really is, again, it's wholly unfair to the public, because that person that is driving under the influence of marijuana is impaired.
Well, you know, what bothers me is you would think that these are intelligent people. They went to law school. The guy's not just a prosecutor. He's the lead prosecutor. He's the district attorney. And listen what he testified to recently before his state legislature. He said that the cannabis DUI law is on a collision course with current medical marijuana laws because it precludes those who use the drug from being able to drive. Absolutely. We don't want you driving impaired. And it wouldn't matter if you were on marijuana or oxycodone or Vicodin or you were on Valium or, you know, any type of, you know, sedative or analgesic medication that would definitely impair your driving. No, we don't. It doesn't mean you can't smoke marijuana if it's legal in your state. It doesn't mean that you can't take the prescription Schedule 3 and Schedule 4 medications. You just can't drive. Driving is a privilege. It's not a right. And by the way, the driving privilege is conditional. What is it conditional upon? Obeying all the rules in your state's vehicle code, of which one of the most prominent laws are, you will not drive while impaired. Alcohol, cannabis, any type of drug.
Right, exactly.
What is so difficult to understand?
Well, you know, the one in Texas that you said that, you know, he's not going to prosecute trespassing and what else? Drugs and what were the other things that you said?
Well, psychotropic meds and...
No, the one in Texas that's
That's the district attorney in Dallas County.
And he's not going to prosecute trespassing and some drugs.
And petty thefts.
Okay, now, so here's my question.
Go ahead, because I'll tell you more about it.
Okay, so I'm going to trespass on his property and take some drugs while I'm on there and steal a few things. And is he not going to prosecute me at all?
Well, that's on his property.
Well, I understand, but it's on my property is just as important.
Oh no, I totally get it, Lynn. And you know, we're talking about this idiot district attorney from Philadelphia, Larry, Krasner. So listen, we just talked about his ridiculous thought process. Here's the thought process from the district attorney in Dallas County, Texas. We're not going to prosecute a petty theft if they stole because they needed it, whatever they stole, and there was no economic incentive to steal.
And we've talked about that before, because you could say that about anything.
You can say it about anything. Course. You know what? I don't have a ride to get to work, so I'm going to steal a car because I need it. I'm not going to sell the car for economic gain. I'm just going to steal it because I need to use it. I don't have a television to watch. I think I need to be able to watch television. So I think I'm going to go into Costco and steal a flat screen TV and because I need it. I'm not going to sell it. I just need it. I mean, look at the ridiculous slippery slope. Oh, by the way, I needed a place to stay, Dallas District Attorney. So I wanted to come in out of the rain. So I broke into your house. It wasn't because I was going to sell your house. It was because I really felt I needed a place to stay.
Yeah.
And I mean, where does this end?
Well, and you have to, it ends when something like that happens to them. And, you know, oh gosh, I wish I could remember exactly what it was, but there was that case I read about just the other day where there was a case like that where somebody had made a law and then it happened to them and they said, oh my God, look what I've done. And it really woke them up. That's what it takes, because when you have like a Gavin Newsom saying, okay, even though you people in California voted 11 times for the death penalty, I can't quite explain that to my daughter, so I'm canceling it. Canceling your millions and millions of votes so that I don't have to explain it to my daughter. If somebody came in, God forbid, and did something to one of his family members, he'd probably be back in favor of it.
Well, you know, what's getting me, and here is a theme that is starting to evolve. Now, this is the third or fourth time that I've heard this theme from the social justice warrior district attorneys. And I'm going to quote from the Philadelphia district attorney. Such legislation, meaning let's get rid of prosecuting DUI cannabis offenses, such legislation would help clear cases from the criminal docket and allow law enforcement officials to focus on other matters. Like what? What are we focusing on? You're handcuffing us with, laws of arrest, search and seizure, shake, rattle, and roll, you know, stop and detain. You're changing all the rules with respect to the rules of engagement and the use of force. You are not prosecuting all these crimes, which are going to cause people to not only, continue to do this. And so you don't call it a crime anymore, but it doesn't stop the bad activity. It doesn't stop the destructive activity. It doesn't stop or save people's lives on the highway. It doesn't do anything. And law enforcement, contrary to what this idiot believes, they are going to be overwhelmed by the amount of crime that is created when these laws have completely taken our criminal justice system off the rails.
And that's not the only thing that's going to happen. Again, it's always the law of unintended consequences because they can't think past their nose.
Right.
What's going to happen? People are going to take the law into their own hands because they know that nobody's coming to help them and they're not going to get in trouble for this. So somebody is now on your property, you're going to go out there with your gun.
Well, can you imagine what it would feel like if you and I were inside our house and all of a sudden, we come home from, going out to the movies or something, and we walk, and I'm armed all the time, and, we walk into our bedroom, and all of a sudden, I see a dark shape, and they start moving towards us in the dark, and it's a person. And all of a sudden, the person sees me, they get scared, all of a sudden they arm themselves, and I have to shoot and kill this person. And guess what? Or maybe I don't shoot and kill them. Maybe I shoot and wound them. And
or maybe they shoot you.
But here's their defense. Let's say it was raining outside. Let's say it was cold outside. Let's say it was hot outside. I felt that I needed to get into this person's house because I needed a place to hold up while the weather was so inclement. I mean, come on. And if the predicate offense is not criminal, that really takes it away from the citizen that is simply trying to defend their life or the life of a loved one. I mean, where does this go next?
Well, they don't think that far. And we have laws for a reason. We have law enforcement for a reason. We have law enforcement to enforce the laws. How simple is that? Now you take the law enforcement capabilities away from the law enforcement officers. You take the teeth out of the laws and you make them, that law's, it's not so bad. So they get to pick and choose. The laws have been put in there, but this one person in this one office is going to pick and choose what they're going to do. And I think that that is absolutely wrong.
Well, for people like the Dallas District Attorney and for people like the Philadelphia District Attorney, Larry Krasner.
And Gavin Newsom.
And you know, but for these people, yes, and Gavin Newsom, because he's an elected official as well, the voters need to remember what these people have done to their communities, and they need to strike back and take their communities back from the very people that are supposed to protect them. Don't forget, Linda, that the district attorney in any county outside of the sheriff is the chief law enforcement officer in that county. They're not just attorneys, they're law enforcement officers. They're badge carrying law enforcement officers, and this is completely against their oath of office to serve and protect.
It absolutely is. And again, they don't have the right, in my opinion, to pick and choose what laws they decide that they're going to enforce. That just flies in the face of having laws in the first place.
Right. And I think we're just going to see more of this in the future. Well, you know, Lynn, when I go out now and I'm visiting these different cities for cases and trials and things like that, I've learned that I don't need to rent a car anymore. And in fact, what I've started doing is actually booking my hotels fairly close to the courtroom and taking Uber from the airport to get into where the hotel is, and then from the hotel, you know, to court and back. And I'll tell you what, I'm starting to save some considerable money. And it was our administrative assistant, Shelby, that who's, you know, young and very much into using these applications on her phone and everything. And she's the person that actually introduced me to Uber. But now I understand that they are going on strike, Uber and Lyft nationwide.
Well, all across the country, just ahead of Uber's public offering, where they expect to raise something like $91 billion. So the Uber and Lyft drivers, now that they've become very successful companies, have decided that now they want better wages, better benefits, a voice in policy decisions, basic workplace protections for drivers. And the drivers, by the way, are independent contractors, so they're not on payroll.
Right. They're not employees.
They're not employees. So they are going on strike to get, you know, basically the things that employees would get, benefits and things like that. And I think it's a really interesting story because, you know, somebody had a really great idea with Uber and Lyft. Really with Uber first, I believe. A really great idea. And they took it and they gave thousands upon thousands of people employment, either that had no employment or so many that we've talked to that it's a second job for them and helps them get further in their life to where they want to go, right? Gives them that extra lift.
Exactly. And for both of us, whether we're using Uber together or we're using it individually, we like talking to the drivers, mm-hmm. and we're finding out all about their histories and why they're Uber drivers and what they like about being an Uber driver. And I'll tell you what, I like Uber. I haven't driven Lyft yet, but I like Uber because it's far more convenient than a taxi cab. I think the drivers are much better socially in talking with you and customer service. I feel like I'm almost in a prison when I'm in a taxi cab.
Yeah.
You know, you
yeah.
feel like you're actually in an old squad car is what, you know, with the grating or whatever for safety. But I like it better. And what this strikes me as, like you said, is that some entrepreneur came up with a great idea that you could do this job any time of the day or night, work as much as you want or as little as you want.
Your own hours.
Your own hours. I mean, completely independent.
Take a ride or don't take a ride.
Use your own vehicle so you're very comfortable in your own work environment. And now it looks to me like they're starting to unionize and change the entire paradigm. I think as a person, if I was the person that came up with that idea, I would be extremely disappointed.
Well, I would too. And you know, I understand the drivers, but the thing is, this guy started this company And he gave all of these people opportunity. And now they're like, okay, well, now we want more from you. And now we want more from you. And that is the way that you destroy a company, you know. So I don't know what's going to happen with this, but it's something to really watch, because it's just something that really frustrates me. Things should happen to me by merit and not by
entitlement,
being forced.
Yeah. Exactly. And the people that are complaining are the people that brought nothing to the table. They are never the people that came up with the idea. They are not the people that took the financial risks that an entrepreneur has to take. But, and they've done pretty well with Uber and, you know, having an independent subcontracting relationship. And this is just typical when people start to feel entitled and they want to take from the people that started the idea in the first place.
Exactly.
I think it's going to bite them in the butt.
I think so.
I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
As former law enforcement officers, we know that your life and the lives of those you love and work with can change in an instant when you encounter an active shooter.
Unfortunately, in today's world of uncertainty, encountering an armed active shooter can have deadly consequences. That's why the key to survival is training and preparedness.
And that's why we want to invite our listeners to seriously consider taking our Response to Active Shooter training course.
Violence can happen to you anytime and anywhere, and when you least expect it. Having a response and survival plan and engaging it can be the difference between life and death for you or a family member.
Our Response to Active Shooter courses are customized for the corporate, school, church, restaurant, and small business environment at a reasonable budget that fits your needs.
So don't put this life-saving training off because you don't think it will ever happen to you. We call those people victims.
Our Response to Active Shooter instructors are all nationally renowned tactical law enforcement experts who will guide you through the life-saving protocols you'll need to survive an active shooter event.
So be a victor, not a victim. Go to ResponseToActiveShooter.com to learn more today.
Remember, that's all one word, ResponseToActiveShooter.com, and be safe out there.
Okay, we're rounding the bend with our last cup of coffee.
Okay, well, you know what? Springtime brings on something with a lot of people, which is allergies.
And, you know, we were driving back to Texas from California the last couple of days, and I could definitely see that because the flowers are just amazing. For the last 1,000 miles that, you know, come into Kendall County, going all the way back from, you know, before, I don't know, Fort Stockton or whatever, the flowers are just gorgeous. But we were taking some pictures of the dog in the flowers, right? In the daffodils and in the daisies and the blue bonnets. And we realized, oh, wait a minute, there's a lot of pollen here.
Yeah, it's a lot of pollen.
Started sneezing.
And I know that I've had the whole itchy eyes and everything. But, you know, there's, besides the things that you really do know about allergies, there's some other symptoms that they cause that people don't know, and they might attribute it to something else when it's really allergies. So let's talk about those for a second.
Okay.
Feeling tired all the time can be symptoms of an allergy.
I did not know that.
Yeah, and it's because your body, when it encounters an allergen, it releases histamine. And histamine can make you feel fatigued because your body's kind of working overtime because it's inflammation that happens in reaction to that histamine. So, by the way, it can also cause sinus infections if you're not too careful. You can also have a situation where you're not sleeping well. And, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean something else. It could just be allergy season. If you're congested, you're not breathing normally, you wouldn't be sleeping very well.
And you know, sometimes you can actually get allergies off of your dog because they're running around and all that pollen and it's landing on their coat.
On their coat, yeah.
And then you're petting them and brushing them and touching your face and touching your eyes and basically giving yourself the allergy.
Well, and that's what happens to me is when Desi jumps on the bed at night, I can tell when she's been out running around in the garden because, you know, I just start getting, my eyes start itching and watering. And so, yeah, the dogs are a real good allergen carrier. The other thing is, you know, you get kind of brain fog, right?
More than normal, Linda?
More than normal, Ron. actually, researchers have actually found that test scores for students are lower during allergy seasons.
Oh, did not know.
Yeah,
that.
And probably people's work performance at their businesses as well.
I think allergies are very distracting.
Yeah, because you're not on your game, you know?
Well, you know what? Riddle me this. When I was young, I was allergic to nothing. And then as I get older, I become allergic to a couple of things. What causes that? I mean, I would think that what a person would be born with some sort of allergic reaction to certain things rather than growing older over the years and then all of a sudden picking up allergies. I know you're not an allergist, but I thought I would just ask you that question.
Well, you are the doctor, not me.
Not the allergist, though.
But I will tell you what I was told, because I do tend to get hives from things, and I do definitely have allergies, is that your allergies change through life, and things that you were not allergic to before, the very next day you can be allergic to.
Okay.
And it's kind of like, you know how your food choices change? Like maybe you hate mushrooms when you're a kid, but then you love them when you're an adult.
Yes.
So your body does the same thing with allergies. You can be allergic to something that you weren't, and you can stop being allergic to things. So just how we're made, I guess. But anyway, you can get brain fog, which really is, you know, it can be attributed to the lack of sleep, but it just makes you feel, you know, kind of like when you have a head cold, just a little bit foggy and not just totally real sharp.
Okay.
A lot of people also get low libido when they have allergies.
Oh, that's interesting.
And it kind of messes with your body temperature as well. You can feel way too hot, you know.
Okay.
So people tend to have a decline in sexual activity during allergy seasons.
Oh my God, I'll have to watch out for that.
You can also get sudden allergies, speaking of what you were talking about, to fruits that you were fine with before. So things like bananas and melons, they contain compounds that are real similar to pollen in trees or ragweed. And when you eat them, you could get the same kind of allergic reaction.
Okay.
So when you're in allergy season and you're already having symptoms, other things will tend to just, you know, amplify that. So perfumes, paint fumes, you know, cigarette smoke, different things like that. You can constantly be clearing your throat like that. And when you're really kind of, you know, have a lot of allergens, you're constantly trying to clear it out. To say that politely, to say something else politely, you can also get very bad breath when you are allergic because your mucus and your membranes get swollen and kind of plugged up and things can't drain properly.
Oh, that's...
So it means bacteria.
Well, I'll tell you what, Dr. Linda, yeah. I am learning so much from you this evening.
Well, if you've ever been through the whole battery of allergy tests like I have, you learn a lot. Also, if you read, you learn a lot. So I do tend to read. But anyway, if you're all plugged up, bacteria can settle in and kind of multiply and... you know, so little breath mints might be a good idea there. You can also have a loss of appetite, and because your stomach doesn't feel like really eating so much when you're all congested, and you don't necessarily, it doesn't need to be congestion because allergies come in different forms, but probably the most form that it comes in for pollen is things like the itchy eyes, itchy watery eyes, and the congestion.
Okay.
So those are my allergy advice things for the day for you, Ron.
Thank you.
Well, you remember Groucho Marx?
I love Groucho Marx when he was around.
You can't help but love Groucho Marx. So you remember his thing that he said, one morning I shot an elephant in my pajamas. How he got into my pajamas, I'll never know.
Right.
Okay. Well, here's one for you. Cops pull over the lady in Florida and she pulls an alligator out of her pants.
No way.
Way.
Well, no way.
So I just want to know.
Is that biting humor that you're talking about?
I just want to know what and why this would happen. She also had something like 40 turtles in a bag inside of a backpack.
Oh, well, she's a smuggler then.
Well.
Okay, she's an animal smuggler.
She apparently is, but I don't know if I'd be putting that alligator down my yoga pants.
Were they yoga pants?
Yes.
Aren't yoga pants tight? Wouldn't you see?
But they're stretchy.
But wouldn't you see something in the yoga pants? Come on.
I just can't even go there. I don't even know what people do.
Well, you know, Lynn, you're always coming up with lists, and I thought I would come up a list and talk with you about what kind of salary you need to have to buy a house across the nation in the most expensive areas that we have in the nation and some of the least expensive. So in the city of San Jose, California, you have to have a salary just to buy a house. The average medium-priced house, you have to have a salary of $254,835 just to buy a medium-priced house. In San Francisco, California, you need to make about $200,000 to buy a house. Now, what I thought was interesting in San Francisco is actually San Francisco is one of the very highest markets for housing in the entire country. In San Diego, California, you need to make about $132,000 to get a house. In Los Angeles, California, you need $123,000. And in Boston, Massachusetts, you need $107,000. But in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, you know, like where D.A. Larry Crutchett,
right,
or whatever his name was,
right,
that wants to not prosecute marijuana cases, mm-hmm, you only need $37,000.
Really?
Well,
wow.
What does that tell you about Pittsburgh?
Well,
okay. Probably not a lot of expensive housing going on in Pittsburgh. Now, in Cleveland, Ohio, and you and I do some work in Cleveland, and I was just there a couple of weeks ago, $40,000 salary. In Oklahoma City, $41,000. Memphis, Tennessee, $41,000. In Indianapolis, Indiana, about $43,000. So I just thought I'd throw those real estate prices out.
You know,
there for
I
you.
Really would have thought that the Northern California, San Francisco, San Jose would have been much higher.
Well, the average price for a house in the city of San Jose is really a couple of million bucks.
Right.
A couple of million dollars.
So you can't buy a couple million dollar house on $198,000 income.
But I think what's going on here, and I'll have to take a look at the research, they're counting condominiums as houses.
Oh, well, of course.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's going to drive down the price of a house.
Okay.
Okay, so that's where I think that's coming from. Where in San Jose, you have condos, but really San Francisco has really become a condo city. Because San Francisco only has something like about 535,000 people in the town, where San Jose is a town of, you know, over 2 million people.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
And the vast majority of residences are houses and not condos. Well, Linda, you know, we've been talking about schools and crazy things about schools and school districts. And, of course, we're going back to crazy California or Calizuela. And in Northern California, in George Washington High School. And by the way, I used to live in the neighborhood where George Washington High School was when I was growing up in San Francisco. And the kids in the school want two of the murals of George Washington, our first president and the general of our Revolutionary War. They want it removed because they find it traumatizing to Native Americans and to African Americans.
Well, I'm sorry, but that is ridiculous. And what that tells me is that our kids are not being taught history in any which way, because that's not traumatizing to anybody. And by the way, it is our history, and our history is our history. And if the Germans can let everybody know in Germany about what the Nazis did and what they did as a country, we certainly can have one of our heroes of our country on a mural.
Well, you know, I grew up in that neighborhood, and I got to tell you that even today, you're not going to find a lot of Native Americans who are attending George Washington High School. But you're just so right on. And this is what happens when you don't teach U.S. history and you don't teach civics, and our greatest American heroes are cast aside and covered up because somebody that does not understand history is offended for some reason.
Yes, and it's disgraceful. Well, there's another school story, actually. If you remember, and I think you do, the Covington Catholic student who was looking face-to-face with the Native American, Nathan Phillips, who was the Native American, and the student was Nicholas Sandman. And the press just demonized him as though he was mocking that Native American. And all over the press, they were saying how disrespectful he was. And he has given them, and his attorneys have given all of these media outlets, an opportunity to apologize. And if they didn't apologize, they were going to get sued. Well, CNN is now being sued for $275 million. And the Washington Post for $250 million for defamation. And I think that it's great for somebody, especially somebody 16 years old, to fight back and stand up for themselves and say, I didn't do anything wrong. I was the one, if anybody, that was wronged. And you absolutely demeaned me and defamed me to the entire world. And you need to apologize. And when they did not apologize, now they're getting sued, and I wish him really well.
Yeah, and I think that he may prevail in one of those lawsuits, or at least get a sizable settlement, and he deserves it. I feel so bad for this young man who was just caught up in the politics of this whole thing, who was just completely innocent.
Well, he was caught up in the politics, and the politics wasn't even about him. No. It was about these two publications, CNN and the Washington Post, being against Trump. And they just brought this poor kid into it and made him a scapegoat. And hopefully they have to pay for that.
But you know how disgraceful for the media and these adults, so-called adults, to take it out on this poor kid and to turn him into a scapegoat. I mean, he's just a kid. He's not caught up in all the rigmarole of the national politics and the hate, you know, Trump haters and all of this. And, you know, Nathan Phillips is, you know, the Native American that he was involved with is just a total fraud. Well, listen, I'm about ready to hit the sack, and I know you've got to get up really early, and me at the same time, because I'm taking you to the airport, young lady.
Yep, on the road again.
Okay, here we go.
Okay.